I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast back for another season. Got a new intro, bit of a new feel, but the most important thing is we have the same recurring co-host. I am Justin Cuthbert, and I am pleased to be joined by Julian McKenzie of The Athletic once a week, all season long, just as it was last year, as we reboot for season two on the YSHB. Julian, what is up, my friend?
My friend, always great to see you, buddy. Always good to see your face. Very happy, very excited to be back for another season of the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Really excited to do all this cool stuff with you guys, man. I'm just super amped and blessed to be here, man, and amped for an 82-game NHL season, which I hope by game like 41 or 42, I'm not going to be like, the season's too long, or, oh my God, there's so many games. Like, no, man, I'm here for that action. I'm here to see teams like the Canadiens and the Leafs actually play against American teams for the first time since like pre-pandemic.
I mean, technically, we were cheated last year. I wasn't going to go into technicalities, but this is the first real season of us covering hockey together on a weekly basis. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And I know, despite how busy you are, the audio is just in your blood. Like, it is, I see the awards behind you. I am assuming they're for radio or podcasting or something like that, because they're little discs. I don't think anyone uses discs anymore. So they could have been a couple of years back. But I know that you love talking hockey, and that's why you were coming back to join me, because how can you spend a Sunday better than talking to me about hockey?
I guess do you not have one yourself? I figured someone as esteemed as yourself would have some kind of like plaque or something. Like these are from student radio days, and I have, this is not necessarily in view here, but I will always treasure the Gala DNST award for the Scrum podcast with my good buddy Tristan Damoul. But yeah, I figured you'd have some.
Well, I mean, part of the reason I wanted you back is because I want to be award eligible this year. I mean, if you look behind me, the walls completely blank. I might have to buy a mantle if we can actually, you know, do something that could be recognized. But, you know, maybe that's a couple years down the line. Maybe I'm going to have to bother you.
Canadian Podcast Awards. Get yourself. Yo, we should put ourselves in for the Canadian Podcasting Awards next year. Hey, I've been nominated for that, too. I forget who we lost to. Some soccer podcast, but like, hey, let's go for that.
Let's just get through episode one. How about that? Let's put on a good first show on season two of the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. This is going to be a soft launch of the season. We're just going to kick off some rust, but I do want to mention that there are going to be, you know, changes inevitably to what we're doing at Yahoo Sports. I mean, this is the content game these days, but they're exciting changes. You know, this year, obviously, going to have you on every week, which we had last year. And I'm going to be doing some solo stuff. But in addition to the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast, we're going to be adding your show, Zone Time, which was a YouTube-only thing before this year. It's going to be running on the podcast stream. And everywhere you find podcasts, you'll be able to find Zone Time with you and the wonderful crew that sometimes includes me, but doesn't have to include me because it's wonderful all the time. So I'm happy that I'll be sharing my stream or whatever it's called with Zone Time, because it's the entire Yahoo Sports Hockey coverage now in one place. And I'm looking forward to having that on the stream. Is it called a stream? I'm messing that up.
Well, I mean, I guess if it's live, I guess maybe it could be a stream. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the times you're going to be on Zone Time, man. It's nice to have some diversity on the show. No, I can't say that joke with a straight face. I can't say that joke with a straight face. Oh, I tried. Boy. I thought about it. I'm like, no, I can't do it with a straight face.
I mean,
face.
You said the joke. You said the joke.
I tried. Anyway, I'm really excited about Zone Time being on the podcast feed. I know like a few people like online have been like, hey, can we listen to the podcast? Like, you know, somewhere like, and hey, we'll be able to satisfy those needs, man. But I'm really excited to keep what I think is a really cool show going and also looking to make it even better than it already was through our first go around. So between that and being on the YSHP, like I'm pretty excited and I'm pretty excited for you. I'm pretty excited for everyone on Zone Time to get their shine.
And the best news is because it's going to be in podcast form, it's going to be extended. So there's going to be more Omar, if I can say that.
Yes.
More Sam, oh more Julian, more Rahef, a little bit more of me, more of everyone because Zone Time is going to be, and more Avery. It's going to be even longer this year. And we're going to get all the good stuff that doesn't make it to air because we start talking all this smack after we finish recording. Our producer shuts it off. You just let it run. We'll have all the best stuff come out then. So exciting stuff ahead at Yahoo Sports and the 2021-22 NHL season. We're going to be seeing a lot of each other and it's going to be a lot of fun. And after a long summer, honestly, it feels about right. I feel like we got to get right back into it. And it's a good place to start right here and right now. So usually this time of year, you know, the hockey calendar provides us with like juicy headlines. We have maybe guys over in Europe talking in their native tongue and maybe talking a little bit too much, or we have these contentious contract negotiations, or we have, you know, players who've been stewing all summer coming back with new and interesting perspectives. I guess we have some of that, but we don't have like that one thing that we should really hook this show around. So it's going to be a grab bag of sorts. We'll talk about some outstanding items and notable headlines we missed and a couple new things from this week. But first we've got to start with the group of RFAs that are still waiting for a contract. And I want to go about it this way. We've got Kirill Kaprizov, Brady Tkachuk, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, Rasmus Dahlin. I guess those are the five major guys that still need a contract. And I, as a, you know, a Toronto guy, I got to go back to the Leafs every time. So I want to know out of those five players where they rank on the Mitch Marner summer squeeze scale. Or in other words, which of these contracts is going to be like the hardest to complete, which player is going to be, you know, hardest to satisfy because of either what they want or what position the team is in. So again, which player, Kaprizov, Hughes, Dahlin, Pettersson, and Tkachuk, rates highest for you on the Mitch Marner summer squeeze scale?
That's a really interesting question. I would imagine a big reason why the situations would be difficult has to do a lot with the team's own salary cap structures. We know what Vancouver's deal is with some of the contracts that they have. We know they offloaded some expiring ones that were on the books and they end up getting OEL's contract for the next how many years. How's that going to affect the fact they have two? They have two RFAs who are supposed to be part of their core going forward that they have to deal with. But I don't know if it's because of the fact that because I'm at the Athletic and I edit a lot of Michael Russo's articles, but I'm really in tune with the Kirill Kaprizov story. Like, this is a guy who Calder Trophy winner, a guy who should be a part of that Minnesota Wild team for a very long time. And just for whatever reason, both sides have yet to come together on a deal. And Bill Guerin has gone on radio in Minnesota being like, oh, well, you know, it's a big deal. These things take time. I don't know if that's necessarily assuaging worries from Wild fans just as yet. And this is a team with the fact that they bought out two marquee free agents from yesteryear's past, and they're going to have to pay for those well into the next couple of years. How's that going to affect a Kirill Kaprizov deal if they give him $9 million, which I think is a number that's been thrown out there for him? I would imagine because of the difficulties, because of the profile of the player that Kirill Kaprizov is, and maybe some slight bias, he's number one. And I guess Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes are like tied for second, because I think Elias Pettersson at the player that he is, one of the best young players in the National Hockey League today, he has to get paid. Quinn Hughes, you're looking at some of the defensemen who are making
$9 million. A guy like a Dougie Hamilton, or at least coming close, at least, or Seth Jones, at least getting that rate as well. Like, where does Quinn Hughes fit? This is a guy who is part of that newer generation of mobile, dynamic, exciting young defensemen like a Cale Makar, who also got paid through an extension earlier this summer. So Quinn Hughes has to be making north of 8.75, right? I do not envy Jim Benning. So I imagine those two, I'm going to put them tied, because Jim Benning has, it's already a big deal to have one notable RFA on your plate. To right. have two high profile RFAs, they get to tied for a second. And then I guess Tkachuk and then Dahlin after that.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you that Hughes and Pettersson are tied for second. I think you can kind of package them together, and I think that will help Jim Benning. I mean, those two players have decided to be represented by the same group. I believe it's JP Barry. And I think there's going to be some sort of package where those guys come together. I don't know if that helps those two or hurts those two, but I think it sort of helps Vancouver navigate these waters. Not to say it's going to be easy. This is a team that pushed itself back up against the cap with their offseason moves. Obviously, they got rid of some bad money, but they took on some potential mediocre money, and they've really pushed themselves by, you know, at least taking on the contracts that they did with OEL and then signing Connor Garland, Jason Dickinson. I mean, it was not a cheap offseason. They have obviously had some ambition, and they went out and they spent, and that means it's going to be difficult to get Hughes and Pettersson as much money as they possibly can. But my number one is going to be Brady Tkachuk. I feel like it's, I may be speculating a little bit, but I feel like it has all the makings of sort of a issue between potential future captain and organization. And I think one of the big reasons is, I don't think really know how much Brady Tkachuk is worth. As I mentioned, probably the future captain, the most important player in the organization right now, maybe second behind Thomas Chabot, but probably still Brady Tkachuk. But this is a player that's no lock to reach 50 points, hasn't done so in his career just yet. Obviously, there was two shortened seasons, but he's floating around like the 40 to 50 point range historically and based on projections. And that's not really the type of points or production that you give out $8-9 million to. So I find that interesting. And obviously, this is historically a cost conscious team. They've got Thomas Chabot in, I believe, at $8 million. So can he negotiate for more than that? And then I also think it's a family, the Tkachuks, that understand their worth, right? I think Matthew Tkachuk signed a bridge deal, made a decent amount of money on that bridge deal. It didn't really take many concessions on that bridge deal, but set himself up for a future payday, trying to maximize his earnings. And I feel like that's going to be the Tkachuk way, just because they've been through this several times before. So it's a player that maybe can't, you know, stand out and obviously show and demonstrate just by numbers that he's worth a certain amount. And you've got a team that, yeah, they don't pay many players a lot of money, but they don't really want to pay players until they're really competing and they've got fans in the seats and they're selling playoff tickets. So I feel like the Tkachuk thing could get messy. And that's why I've got it number one over Kaprizov, who, yeah, he wants the most. He has the most leverage. He's got Russia, who he can basically just return to and make more money than maybe even Connor McDavid, based on you know, how much he's coveted over there and how much they're willing to spend on a player like that. But Minnesota also cleared so much cap space. They know they need this guy under contract, so they're probably just going to, you know, come in or meet his demands, I guess, as long as this plays out, because I just feel like they have to get Kaprizov back in a green sweater, or it's going to be a complete disaster over there. So that's why I've got Tkachuk over Kaprizov in this case.
I have a question about the Brady Tkachuk file. Do you think there's going to be a situation, or do you think one of the reasons why it's drawn out as long as it is, you know, maybe the second?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fans want to throw out like a long deal. And I think that's what's been, someone has been reporting that out there. I think Bruce Garriott said like at least like 8 years, like that term has been thrown out there. Don't you think Brady might want to play with Matthew? Maybe somewhere in the States and having him commit for how many years in Ottawa while there is a really good core in place. Maybe that's not the best thing you want to do. Maybe you're thinking, okay, just get a shorter deal in, see what my brother wants to do. And then we team up and we go somewhere else together. Do you think that's a possibility at all? Or
I kind of find it hard to believe that Brady Tkachuk wants to be somewhere else, at least not to the desire that I think maybe Matthew might. Obviously, there's some issues there with Matthew, his teammates. Maybe he doesn't want to play for a guy like Daryl Sutter, who's not going to be exactly oozing creativity or encouraging creativity the way. Not to say that Matthews is over. Matthew Tkachuk is probably perfect for the Daryl Sutter mold, but perhaps he wants to be in a system where there are 80 to 90 point seasons, and that might just not be possible in a Daryl Sutter regime. So that's something to watch moving forward, obviously. But I do get the feeling that Brady Tkachuk wants to be a Senator, wants to be the lead guy. I think if you watch him, there's no player having more fun on the ice and with his teammates than Brady Tkachuk. But I just don't think he's going to do that at a discount. I think he's going to demand as much as possible. I think he knows his worth. I think he knows that he's supposed to be the future captain of the team. I think he knows he's the face of the franchise as is right now. And I think Keith, and from what Matthew's been through and what the agencies have been through and what Brady thinks about himself, I just don't think he's going to settle for something. So yeah, I could see a bridge deal. I can't see him signing for Shabbat money long-term. I could see a 3-year deal at the same as what Matthew earned. And then we're talking about $10 million or something like that in a couple of years time when the salary cap does finally go up. I feel like Brady's got that sort of demand or bargaining power, or just, they just know their worth. And I think that's a key part of this.
I'm still kind of holding out hope, I guess, for the drama's sake that like at least Brady like thinks about it, but there is the possibility that, like, you know, Brady negotiates some kind of deal. And if Ottawa has enough money on the books, maybe they make a move here or there. Brady Tkachuk talks to Pierre Dorion, is like, hey, make a trade with Calgary and bring Matthew here, or get Matthew to come here as a free agent. That's a possibility too. It doesn't mean they both have to go to like St. Louis or something, or they have to go to some other market together. It could be a situation where Ottawa is a much better place for to fit both players. And if you have both Tkachuks in the same organization, watch out for the rest of the Atlantic Division, especially if all those players and prospects come up nicely in Ottawa, because there's I mean, I know the way that they're kind of building now, it seems as if they want to be a bit more competitive for this coming season, but they have a lot of potential with some of those young players there. And, a guy like Matthew Tkachuk, not saying that's going to happen now, not saying that might happen ever, but could you imagine if, you know, Brady Tkachuk tried to convince his brother to come to Ottawa? I'm kind of jumping the gun a little bit here, but like that would be fun. I just want that out there as a thought.
No, that'd be seriously cool and a seriously huge win for a team like the Ottawa Senators. Man. And I feel like if one brother was going to follow the other, it would be Matthew following Brady. I'm not really sure why I feel that way. It's usually the younger following the older, but I feel like Brady's like establishing something a little bit more meaningful where he is, as opposed to Matthew Tkachuk, which is interesting, an interesting juxtaposition, or at least a comparison at this point in both of their careers. I did not mention Rasmus Dahlin. Let's just be honest. There shouldn't be a problem here. It's not a player who's met his potential, and it's not a team that has any worry about what they should be paying a guy like Rasmus Dahlin, because you just better hope you can keep him around when you're actually on the upswing, or if you ever reach the upswing. Whatever he wants, he should get, and it'll be more than he deserves, because at this point, I don't think he's earned that quite yet.
Nope. Shoot. I mean, maybe this is a bit excessive to say. If I'm Rasmus Dahlin, like, I'm just chilling, just get whatever money I can get. And if there's a way out, get out of Buffalo, maybe. But you know what? Maybe we shouldn't throw stones at the Sabres. Kevin Adams is there. But I don't know. Just the way they've handled this whole Jack Eichel thing. Maybe that's why Rasmus Dahlin, that file hasn't been dealt with yet. Because Kevin Adams is still just trying to figure out what the hell to do with Jack Eichel. And that's a whole other topic for a whole other day.
Despite Eichel and all the other problems and the fact that it's going to be probably the worst team in the NHL, at least in the Eastern Conference, they still got an outdoor game. They're going to be at Tim Hortons Field, I believe in March, to play the Toronto Maple Leafs in what should be, you know, it'll be fun.
Are you going?
Be a lot of Leaf fans there. I could probably find a way to get there. I've been there before for a Johnny Manziel game, and I tell you, the parking was not easy. So I'll have to figure that out if I'm going to be at the Leaf game, which will be a lot more busy than that Johnny Manziel game a couple years back. Okay, let's move on to what we've been talking about for 2 years, which is COVID-19 and how that is affecting the sporting world. I mean, it is pretty encouraging that we're getting outdoor game announcements and media day and all these other great things that are happening and what should be a relatively normal NHL season that, oh yeah, now has a 32nd team that's just going to be playing. So everything's got to be pretty good. I mean, we've got TNT announcing what their broadcast team is going to be like. We got ESPN and they're having dinners and having tons of fun. It's going to be pretty cool. We're going to get a regular season for the most part, but not just because of, you know, we've defeated this virus. It's because that NHL players have come to their senses and agreed to be pretty much unanimously vaccinated, 98% apparently, according to Bill Daly. He got to boast about the vaccination rates among the player population at Media Day earlier this week. Very, very exciting stuff. It's very encouraging that NHL players have decided to make themselves 98% vaccinated. And you have to give credit to the NHL for helping influence this sort of number, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. Look, we've spoken about COVID a lot of times on this show. We've spoken about getting vaccinated. I'm just relieved that the players seemingly got their act together. I'm sure the next step is to figure out who among the 2% is not vaccinated. And I'm ashamed to say, like, I'm just like thinking of every team. And I'm just like, okay, like, who would be that person to say that they're not vaccinated? And the biggest clues that some people might get is just like going on a media day and which player is going to say, oh, my vaccination status is a personal decision, because that's what it's turned into now. Basically now, if you say that it's a personal decision whether or not you got vaccinated, that seems to be like a dead ringer for whether or not you did or didn't. Well, for a dead ringer for you that you didn't get vaccinated. And that, I mean, I don't want it to turn into that, but I don't know. If you're those 15 players, I think it's around that number, who haven't been vaccinated or whatever the number it is, like, I'm very curious as to why. I'm very curious as to what's holding you back. Is it a health condition? Is it something else that's holding you back? And like, how is it going to affect when it comes time for you to play games? Because we've already seen it with at least two coaches in the National Hockey League, Rocky Thompson out in San Jose and Sylvain Lefebvre earlier this week from the Columbus Blue Jackets coaching staff, who was fired for not complying with the COVID mandate. Like, at this point, like, if you're a player, like, I'm very curious as to why you wouldn't comply, especially with 98% of the other team of other players doing this. Also, for people wondering, like, Carolina Hurricanes are among the teams who say they're 100% vaccinated. So it seems as if Tony D'Angelo, of all people, is vaccinated. Yeah, I know. Really weird. Really weird.
Really against the grain there for Tony D'Angelo. You'd mentioned like why they're not doing it. Well, we certainly know it's not because they love team dinners, because unvaccinated players are basically going to be able to do nothing on the road, even in their own city, it seems like. I mean, that is probably the biggest reason why we've reached 98%, is because basically your freedoms have been taken away as an NHL player if you're unvaccinated. You cannot do anything. And that's why credit goes to the NHL for getting to this number. I wonder if they floated out this figure today to sort of influence the final 10 to 15, like, you really want to be embarrassed like this? Because it's going to become a witch hunt. We both know it's going to become a witch hunt. You're going to be able to figure it out because they're not going to be available to the media or available for media day. Like, no one at media day, clearly they were all vaccinated because they were coming into contact with people. If you're going to be doing anything in the public sphere, anything, you are vaccinated. So we're going to figure out who these players are just because that's the world we live in. You can't really have privacy nowadays. We are going to figure it out. And there's going to be shame from all corners, from maybe not team, probably teammates, from team, probably from media members. It's just going to be rampant. And I wonder if it's like, oh, are we 98%? Am I going to be that guy? Am I going to be that guy that's exposed with no one, you know, to link arms with? I just can't see it happening. So I wouldn't be surprised if that number drops below 10, maybe well below 10. And we get to the point where pretty much everyone, if it's safe to do so, considering it's safe to get vaccinated. Don't want to put that out there. Safe to get vaccinated if you are healthy enough to get vaccinated. But if there is something where, you know, there's a medical condition with Rocky Thompson, I get it. But I feel like that number is going to drop because who wants to be embarrassed like that? I mean, you're showing your ass if you don't get vaccinated, in my opinion, but you're really showing your ass if you don't do it, if everybody else is.
Yeah. And you especially showing your ass if the reason why you're not getting vaccinated is because you believe Nicki Minaj, when she said her cousin's friend, her testicles got affected by this. See how dangerous misinformation can be for like really influential people? That's like the strangest thing I've heard. Like,
I mean, nobody wants that outcome, but
no,
you don't have to listen to Nicki Minaj or her cousin.
Or her cousin's friend. Like, just whatever. Just go get vaccinated, man. And you're right. Like, I definitely think we're going to figure it out with players who is and who isn't and all that. The one other thing I want to mention on this topic too is because of what's been going on with the players and what's been going on with the rest of society as a vaccine, I'm really intrigued at what it means for like media people like ourselves and what it means for access. Because again, to quote Michael Russo, my colleague at The Athletic, he's the one who tweeted out, who went through the COVID protocol and saw that there was that provision that says that NHL media will be allowed to go into locker rooms. And people have been wondering for the last like year and a bit, like how much is COVID going to affect that locker room access, the ability to have one-on-one conversations with players or anything beyond a Zoom call. And while it is out there that, you know, people like you and I can go into a locker room, I still have this weird feeling that like there's still going to be some measure of restrictions, right? Like even today, like I'm thinking of, well, at least, well, yesterday, I guess at the time, whenever you guys get this, the time might be a little skewed. I know the Canadians are going through their rookie camp and like they still have some of their players doing media availabilities over Zoom, but some of the media members that are covering the rookie camp are able to go into the press box at the practice facility. What does it mean when the regular season starts, when that whole horde, I don't know how it is in Toronto at the Scotiabank Arena.
Oh, it's a horde.
It's definitely a horde.
It's a throng.
It's like, you know, like the running of the bulls when like they have the bulls like in like the little like stable, they open it up and then the bulls kind of go out. That's kind of what it's like when the doors open to the Canadiens locker room at the Bell Center. And it's a horde of journalists, French and English, going in, trying to find a bunch of players to get interviews from. You see the big scrum for a Carey Price and a smaller one for a lesser known player. What's that going to be like in COVID? Is it going to be a thing where the Canadiens are going to be like, okay, we're going to make three or four players available? Are the Leafs going to do something different? Are the Senators? Are the Oilers? Like, I know I'm mentioning Canadian franchises here, but I just have this weird feeling that like, you know, yes, there's a win for journalists to be in the locker rooms to get that access, but I'm still on pins and needles trying to think like, okay, like what does it mean like in terms of that access? What does that look like? And I'm not going to be completely assuaged of any worry that I might have until I see it for myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually an opportunity for public relations departments to refine this because you're right, it's kind of like the running of the bulls sometimes, especially after a game. It's a bit of a nightmare. It can get a little messy sometimes. And it's a bit of a competition, right? Like there's elbows being thrown. There are shoulders hitting jaws. But it shouldn't ever be like that, should it? So I feel like this is the perfect opportunity for, okay, we all want to talk to Carey Price because he gave up 5 in a loss. We'll put him in front of the podium and everyone get their chance. And we can do this in orderly fashion. But you know, this is a September 28th afternoon, training camp is in full swing, and people are trying to get their more human interest stories, open the room, have some one-on-one conversations. That's where the good stories are anyway. So I think journalists can have both, the best of both worlds, where they can have those one-on-one conversations when they can write their stories and they can get their good nuggets. But we can also have those moments that are big and everyone should be involved. And therefore, like a player coming off a bad outing and having to meet the media. And that should be done maybe a little bit more of an orderly fashion. And instead of people literally throwing elbows in a scrum just to get their mic in front of Carey Price's face. That's just probably how it should be.
You ever thrown an elbow in a scrum?
I'm usually, I try to be the nice guy when I'm over there. I'm trying not to get too involved. It's normally the cameramen and women that get really feisty because, they have one job and that's to get a clean shot. And if people are, coming in and out of that, it gets a little bit dramatic. It's that the drama that's not really for me. You? Yeah, you throwing some bows in your day?
Did you say throw some bows? What is
my some bows?
Am I dealing with Ludacris here? I was the only one that bad. Is it Ludacris who said throw them bows?
Yeah, it's Ludacris. I believe it was.
It's Ludacris. Yeah. I've never thrown any bows in a scrum. Nice. I'm the dude who, like, in the scrum, I guess before the pandemic, when I was a couple pounds lighter, I was able to kind of like finagle my way into like a small space. And at first you're like, oh, okay. I was able to get my mic in there and get get some quotes in. But then after like 8 minutes, you're like, what am I going to do? I have to stay in the spot for like too long. So it's not that comfortable. So I think this year I'm going to try to just take that step back and, just hope maybe one of my colleagues will be nice enough to, put my mic in front or something, whatever. Like I'm not going to try to get in too much close contact this year. Then again, I'm sure they probably won't let us do that anyway.
I mean, I think you bring up a key point. I mean, 18 months off the shelf from a fitness perspective, we were already, as a group, probably not the most fit people. And we're sort of wedged in between. Backs are sore all the time as is. And now without that normal day-to-day walking and everything, all the sedentary lifestyles from hockey reporters everywhere, I mean, it's not going to be pretty. So we should just get rid of the scrums. Maybe a 5-person limit at those would be the best thing for everyone. But I love the move, like when a local TV news station comes and they always sit in the middle and crouch down and just throw the thing up. That's the best move. No hockey reporter does that, but local news channels, they love getting right in the middle and they're like below the athlete and they're just looking up. And that's it's a big game when someone is doing that.
Yeah. I'll just say this. I'm convinced and I'm willing to be proven wrong. The only member of hockey media in Canada who has ensured that they are in tip-top shape is Chris Johnston, because that dude runs every day. Mm-hmm. He's the only dude. And look, I don't know what you've been doing the last 18 months. I'm trying to just eat a little better, try to slim down just a little bit, but I'm willing to bet no other member of hockey media has done more to improve their fitness and well-being than Chris Johnston, because that dude literally runs every day. He ran for a marathon in the middle of the pandemic.
Iron Man Sean McKenzie might have something for Chris, but they are usually, they were previously a team. I guess I shouldn't go into, business and people moving from station to station, but they used to be the most fit duo in hockey broadcasting and now they're competing entities, I guess. What was I going to say? Oh, the, fitness, my own personal fitness, like it works, both ways, right? Like I'm doing a lot of sitting around at home, but I'm not eating 3 slices of pizza before every Leaf game before going up to the press box. So I feel like those things might be evening out and we might have a bit of a wash through these 18 months, which might be better than most people.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. In my case, it would be hot dogs.
Oh, yeah. I got to get to Montreal at least once to have one of those hot dogs.
Yo, I came through to Toronto in the summer. When you come to Montreal, let me know. We're
the draft's coming back there, right? The
draft July. Is next July.
It was a rain check.
Yes,
that might be when it has to happen. That might be exactly when it has to happen. Okay, let's move on to Connor McDavid. Now, we've heard a little bit from him. He went off about, the rules. He wants them to be called. I believe he didn't get a penalty called against him in that first round series versus the Winnipeg Jets, which seems like a big issue. So I don't, you know, blame him for answering a question about getting calls in important moments and just in general. But I don't really want to talk about that. And I don't really want to talk about Zach Hyman potentially being the best winger he's had other than Leon Draisaitl. Obviously, those two form the most, probably most amazing partnership in hockey right now. But I mean, Donalds can't really afford to put them together. So Zach Hyman comes in, Mr. Utility. Maybe Connor McDavid's in a far better place. But I want to be more general with this question.
Okay.
Keep in mind, we have the Olympics. Keep in mind, we have an improved, I think, Oilers team, at least forward group, an improved forward group, maybe some room to maneuver. The Oilers have an opportunity in that Pacific Division. So with the Olympics and that opportunity, I'm asking you, Julian, will we feel less bad for Connor McDavid by the end of this season?
Less bad in terms of,
you know, like the sad story of Connor McDavid entering his seventh season, one playoff victory, I believe. Okay, like, are we going to be like, are we not feeling sorry for him because, hey, maybe there's an Olympic gold medal around his neck, or maybe the Oilers win the Pacific Division because Vegas isn't as good and Seattle's not going to be there yet and Calgary's not there. Vancouver's not there despite their changes. Is he going to find a measure of success is what I'm saying.
I hope he does. And it's weird to feel sympathy for a guy who makes as much money as he does. But then you think about the fact that his salary in the National Hockey League is comparable to like a seventh or eighth guy in the NBA. And then you're like, oh, okay, whoops. All that to say, Connor McDavid, I think if you say that he deserves better in his NHL situation, I don't think you're far off. I don't think it's wrong to say that. I would hope for his sake that he does. I'm just curious to see if he's actually going to get that this year with the Oilers, because you're right. The forwards there looking a little better, but the defense, it's a good question. And the goaltending, they decided, okay, we're going to run it back again with Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen. Like it better work. It better work. Or Ken Holland is going to be, who's already feeling that pressure after this offseason, is going to be feeling it even more. Connor McDavid can only do so much, right? He can do a lot. He got over 100 points in a little over 50 games last year. He can only do so much with the talent around him. Zach Hyman should be a good winger for him. They should be a playoff team. They should be a playoff team. They have the best player in the world. And yeah, it's pretty likely you'll have a gold medal unless the Americans somehow just surprise everyone and win, which I still think people are sleeping on the Americans.
But I think Canada, people are sleeping on everyone else, by the way.
That's very true because, you know,
Russia's still good. Finland, Sweden, right? Still good.
Yeah, you know.
Those are pretty high. I don't know if you saw the odds, but Canada's like a huge favorite. I'm like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on that. Good countries playing hockey nowadays.
Yes, but also like, I guess they're that way because Canada has like a whole bunch of great centers who are like looking to play wing. Like people in Montreal who say like, man, Nick Suzuki has a good chance of making 2022. Ryan O'Reilly might not make Team Canada, and he's a really good center. Anyway, all that to say, Connor McDavid, to answer your question, if he wins a gold medal and he wins a series, I might still feel bad because this is a guy who I would love to see play deep into the playoffs like every year. And considering what the Western Conference looks like, considering what the Oilers look like, I'm not sure this is the year to do it. And I can't help but imagine that if he goes through another year where he falls short of playing really meaningful hockey in the playoffs, you can't help but feel that more frustration is going to show, right? Like Connor McDavid doesn't strike me as one of those dudes who's just like, I'm in it to just make a whole bunch of money and just collect my checks and get on out of here. This is a guy who wants to play hockey, wants to win at hockey, wants to win at the highest level possible. Winning a first round series wouldn't be enough for this guy. Yeah. He has to go far, but I don't know if his team will be able to do that.
No, I don't think they're going to be, but I do think this is the year we finally see him smile, because I do, as much as I think there are other contenders for the gold medal, I do believe he's going to get a moment that we can all savor, and certainly he can savor in Beijing, because he is going to be obviously the lead dog on Canada, which is going to be unbelievably talented. And we are going to be treated to something that we've deserved and I say we deserve it, but who really deserves it is a guy like Connor McDavid. He's going to have this opportunity finally, and I think he's going to make best use of it, because I think he knows that the Edmonton Oilers are not at the point yet where they can be true contenders, and that sad ending to this season will probably be there at the end, whether it's at a meaningless game 82 where they don't make the playoffs, or if they crash out in one of the first couple rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But if he wins a gold medal, wins a round, maybe two, bags another Hart Trophy, which should be considered a probable event at this point, then I think we could probably call it Connor McDavid's best year by the end of it. But we'll see, because, you know, we've made these prognostications before and it hasn't worked out so well for number 97. But I think this is the year.
I hope so, man. I want success for this dude. I say it all the time. He's a really exciting player, but I don't want to go through like how many years and he doesn't get out of like the second round or something. Like, that would suck for a guy of his caliber. Like, and the general managers he's had to deal with, not to be able to put him in a position where he could go far, it's a waste of talent.
I'm really looking forward to seeing him this year. I mean, I think he hit another level last year. I think playing Canadian teams helped that. I think it was, you know, the environment that was pretty conducive to that sort of performance. But I think he's got that in him. I think he's going to reach that next level, and he's going to do stuff that we haven't seen in a long time this year. That's at least my not so bold prediction. What I did like seeing was some original content from the new broadcasting partners there in the United States, with ESPN bagging a pretty high profile interview, given the circumstances, with Linda Cohn interviewing Evander Kane. I guess it was earlier this week, and it came out on Thursday. Now, I didn't come off impressed by Evander Kane by any means. I guess the get is more impressive than the actual result of the interview. But this is what you want to see from ESPN for sure. Like, we want to see them really dive into this content game, raise the profiles of these NHL players. And this is a important interview, and one that had to happen because of all the things that are dogging Evander Kane right now, with his legal issues, his issues at home, and everything that sort of followed him in this past few years, and certainly this summer. What I didn't really like, though, was the past tense that he was using throughout the interview. This is a guy who basically said on multiple occasions that he had a gambling problem. And it seems like, you know, not everyone's the same, and not every addiction is the same, but you don't just wash your hands of a gambling problem like it's nothing. So I think the tense was an issue with what Evander Kane said. But in other ways, like, you know, I feel a little bit more confident after believing that he didn't bet on the NHL. He didn't bet on NHL games. He didn't throw games. He just made bad decisions by gambling the night before games and not being a great teammate and probably not being a great husband, if we're just going to deduce facts. But I don't think that he's done maybe the egregious, horrific things that we may have thought. And maybe that's taking way too much from an edited interview, but I just feel a little bit more comfortable believing that betting on hockey was something that he didn't do. Now, what's happening at home, I probably shouldn't make any judgments on that, but in that one thing, betting on hockey and that issue, I just feel a little bit more comfortable now.
Look, just from what's come out of this whole interview with Evander Kane, yeah, ESPN and Linda Cohn deserve the big up for being able to land that interview. I'm with you on the fact that it raises the profile of a guy like him. And of course, with the rights deal that they have with the National Hockey League, wouldn't surprise me if we saw more and more of those types of interviews and one-on-ones and whatever. Evander Kane, excuse my French, he's to figure his shit out. I'm sorry. Like we've seen the reports over this past summer about how his teammates are not a fan of him. This whole gambling thing is just a big storm cloud over his head. He had to file for bankruptcy as a result of all the gambling that he had to do. This is a guy who, you know, he needs to figure his shit out. He needs to put himself in a position where he needs to get on right with his teammates, whether it's in San Jose or what other place he might end up in. Who knows what that's going to be for his NHL future. Whatever's going on at home, that needs to be settled, because I just don't think that other GMs or other teams or in the National Hockey League are going to want to put up with Evander Kane anymore.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you.
I was just going to say your French better than my English there, because it didn't scream like a player that was like taking responsibility for what happened. I mentioned past tense, like I had a gambling problem, and it was a lot of deflection all the way around. Like, oh, I think my teammates actually like me, or it's not really an issue, the money anymore and all this stuff. Like, it's not like he was a guy who was just tackling what was head on. And as you alluded to, clearly he's got to tackle what's head on, because he can't just show up and run out this contract and everything's fine. Like, there's got to be some sort of atonement for the serious financial trouble he's put himself in, the emotional distress and trouble he's put his family in, and of course, just what happens in the locker room and with his teammates. Like, there's a lot of issues, and it didn't feel like a player that was ready to tackle those issues head on.
Seriously. And this whole ordeal, this is not the first time we've heard Evander Kane and some story like this attached to him. We've heard stories in Buffalo and in Winnipeg, and now this is happening. And I'm sorry, I can't help but think that there are other people around the league who see all this stuff, enough people who have played with Evander Kane, and they're just like, they don't want to deal with that, you know? So I can't help but feel that, like, his NHL future, like, this is kind of like a last chance for him. If he ends up playing, if the NHL finds that there was no cause to suspend him indefinitely or anything like that for their investigation, and he's able to play, then he better find a way to make it right and start turning over a new leaf. And that's not something you can just do right away. But Evander Kane, if he's serious about it, should at least start to take those steps towards getting to that point. But if he's not being sincere about this, then dude, go on with your life and get out of the league or do whatever you need to do. Because I'm sorry, I don't have time for a guy like that who is going to just deflect everything onto other people and not take ownership for himself. I mean, maybe I'm making this a bit more personal or anything like that. It sounds like it's kind of just coming from me, but like, I just think with the whole Evander Kane ordeal, this is a guy who, you know, should be able to. I think of what happened during the bubble and his alignment with the Hockey Diversity Alliance, which he's not with right now because of everything going on in the investigations. That should have been an opportunity for him to go through whatever period of atonement he needs to go through for past transgressions. And I'm not saying it would absolve everything that he's gone through, but it would have at least started that process. And now the fact that he's at this point, it's just infuriating just to see as a hockey fan. It's just infuriating just to see. And I think if I feel this way, then his teammates must be feeling like 10 times more pissed off at this. Evander Kane just needs to figure his shit out, or he's going to find himself without a job and San Jose is just going to cut him loose, because I'm sure San Jose and other markets in the National Hockey League, with what has already been put out there with Evander Kane, do not want to put up with this type of player anymore.
Life shouldn't be easy for someone who's squandered millions and millions of dollars and is bankrupt and is at the verge of potentially being kicked out of his own dressing room. And he looked like a guy that just seemed like life was a little bit too easy given the position that he was in. So we'll see. I mean, I'm a second chance guy. I hope Evander Kane gets things right. As you said, your French was perfect. He needs to get his shit together, and hopefully he can start doing that and, you know, realize that he's in a process here and hasn't completed anything just yet.
Get your shit together and figure it out and work towards it. We're both second chance people, but it should be emphasized, you got to work to earn that second chance.
Precisely. Okay, one last segment here. You know, we haven't really dove completely into what happened in the offseason. Obviously, we talked about it as it happened, and we've had some conversations about who did what and where. And we kind of have an idea of which teams improved, which teams got worse, maybe which team had the best offseason is the team that literally tried to go scorched earth and be the worst team in the league. The Arizona Coyotes probably had the best offseason of any just because of what they were able to accomplish in short order. But among the teams that will be competing this year for playoff spots, who do you think had the best understated offseason? Who are we not talking about enough when considering what they did this summer?
So it's kind of weird because I think we're talking about them because of the core that they had already. And what they did in the playoffs last year and the unfortunate matchup that they had in the first round of the playoffs. they weren't as busy as like a team like the Carolina Hurricanes or the Montreal Canadiens, but a lot of people are pegging this team as a team that will make the playoffs out of their division. And that's the Florida Panthers. I mean, their acquisition of Sam Reinhart, I think, is a good one. And I think it's something that's going to help them potentially be a top three, maybe a top four team out of that Atlantic division. Like, we're looking at Tampa, we're looking at Boston, Florida, Montreal. I'm blanking on another team that will probably come out of there and make it. I don't know why I am. Toronto, Tampa, Boston. Yeah, Toronto, Tampa, Boston, Florida. One of my colleagues at TSN 690, Mitch Gallo, said there's basically four playoff spots for five teams in the Atlantic. And I don't have any qualms about Florida. I might have a few things about Boston. I don't think Tampa will fall back as hard. I wonder if the mental fragility with Toronto, that could be a big question with them. The Canadians, I find a lot of people are kind of poo-pooing them a little bit, but I'm not worried about the Florida Panthers. I think they're going to be a playoff team, and I think they had a really low-key offseason where I think with some of the additions that they made, I think they're going to be in a good spot. They're going to be a playoff team, and while a lot of people are going to be high on them, I think they haven't necessarily talked that much about their offseason pieces, so I think they still count here. So Florida would be my pick.
Yeah, I love Florida. I think Florida is going to win that division. I just feel like it could be second gear for Tampa all season long. We literally just saw it. I was writing them off going into the playoffs because, I mean, you finished third in the division. You didn't put your best foot forward the entire year, but then you just turned it on when you had to. And now coming off a second straight Stanley Cup and another year where you're more confident in yourself, but less urgent in the moment, I just don't think that they're going to go wire to wire and win the division because they just don't need to. Boston, potentially still, like, I think they're not as talented as Florida, at least in a regular season format. I just think Florida has a little bit of a deeper team and there's a lot of talent scattered along that roster. It could be a toss up between those, but I think I'll take Florida out of those two. And I just think Toronto is going to take a step back. They obviously won a division last year, but I see them taking a step back. I don't think they're as good of a team. And I think Florida is going to be the one with the chip on the shoulder and has the talent to match and make best use of their opportunity in that division. So I'm with you. I like Florida a lot, but I went with the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, me and you talked so much last year about what they had to do from a defensive standpoint. Why haven't they added anyone to defense? They have a chance in this division and they sat on their hands and did nothing. And then I guess they heard everyone's cries for them to add on their blue line this summer by going out and getting both Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt. I mean, that solidifies their D. All of a sudden they have a pretty good defense, a solid defense core, maybe a plus defense core after having one of the worst ones in their division last year. That was what was missing. They have the makings of being a very good team from the forward standpoint. They have one of the best goaltenders in the league, potentially the one that will prevent Connor McDavid from winning a gold medal with the Team USA goaltender Connor Hellebuck.
Sheesh.
But they were just missing defensemen. And they got two now in Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt. I think it's going to, you know, make a big difference with a unit that already has Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, Dylan DeMello, Logan Stanley. Like, they're solid now in the back end, and that's really all they needed.
Could you imagine a Stanley Cup final with those two teams we mentioned? Like, both teams with such understated off seasons, powering them to the Stanley Cup final, and everyone sits down and watches the Florida Panthers versus the Winnipeg Jets. The ratings will go through the roof.
Exactly what ESPN and TNT wanted when they spent all that money to get back into the hockey game. Florida Winnipeg would be a unmitigated disaster, but you know what?
Oh, it would.
I'd love it. I'd love it. It'd be fun to watch, I think. You got the sun blaring in your face, so let's just wrap this up with tire.
Sorry.
It's all good, man. It's just
starting to get dark where I'm at. Sorry.
Oh, I thought you just opened the blinds. I had this, like, first started the pandemic, we were doing like COVID stories. So I was doing like news stories and I had to go in front of windows and like, I was in a small apartment sharing room. Like, it was just a disaster. And the sun just started going down or behind a cloud. And I had these blinds in front of me and I just had lines across my face from the sun peeking through the blinds. It was the worst thing ever. And I just thought you were having one of those same moments, but that's
no. I have a lamp on my desk here, and I just noticed like I was looking a little dark in at least in my view, and I just thought, okay, let me see if I could just very subtly turn on the light, see how it goes, and very clearly for those watching, not as subtle. But hey, those are some of the pitfalls you go through when you're doing these recordings at home.
The perils of podcasting at home is you need to know where the sun goes down or what time the sun is going down every day. And it's going down earlier these days, and soon it's going to be 5 p.m. and pitch dark. But that will be good for podcasting because we can just use artificial light. And we're going way too deep into this because people do not care about how we set up our shots. So I will let you bust out the tire pump and hand out your first of season two officially of YSHP.
I wish my tire pump was going to be going towards a happier thing. And I don't know if this was going to be yours as well, but we are a couple days out from the passing of one of the more underrated comedians and Canadians. In fact, Quebec City native, Norm MacDonald, had a near decade long battle with cancer and just all of a sudden no longer in our lives. I know I think of some of the funniest people who I really enjoy. And while Norm MacDonald is not on the top five of my funniest comedians of all time, almost any time I've seen anything from him, I came away laughing and enjoying from him. So it's a bit sad to see that he's no longer with us. I would hope for his family that they are, well, I express my condolences to them. And yeah, a bit of a sad tire pump, but to the legacy of Norm MacDonald, one of the funniest exports our country in Canada has to offer. So yeah, my first tire pump goes to Norm MacDonald.
It's one of those things you don't think about enough, right? Like I guess for obvious reasons, he sort of slipped into obscurity a little bit, like wasn't out there as much because he was dealing with serious health issues, but you sort of forget about how funny that guy was, right? And you just come back and see all these clips. And that's the one positive of something like this happening is you get to relive and see what made him so great with everyone sharing their favorite clips of him and all his late night appearances and what he did on SNL and all that stuff. And just some of the most amazing jokes that you hadn't heard maybe ever or in a very long time. So I enjoyed Norm Twitter as much as it was a sad day. It was also a hilarious day being on Twitter and watching his old clips. My tire pump, less thoughtful perhaps, but I do have to give credit to the NHL for what they put in place in terms of COVID restrictions. The fact that they're hitting 98%, I already went into detail about it, but it's awesome. It's fantastic that we can feel pretty comfortable, you and I as two guys who may be going down there, but more importantly, everyone who's going to be at the rink every day, the players, the training staff, the people that really have to come into contact and work through some uncertain times, that they're going to be able to go to work and be safe. Because all but 10 to 15 players have decided to get vaccinated. The NHL is going to be working in a safe space this season. And that is something to boast about if you're Bill Daly.
Hey, I'm with you on that. And, you know, if you haven't for some reason gotten vaccinated already, I implore you to do so. And if you're one of those people who has to do the quote unquote research, go to veritable sources. And again, do not look at Nicki Minaj's Twitter and do not consult her and her cousin's friend. That's one of the most ridiculous things ever, bro. Like she's from Trinidad and I'm half Trini. I'm laughing about it with like all the relatives, bro. Like this is the most ridiculous thing. You don't want to take the vaccine so bad. You're going to come up with that stuff. So yeah, full marks to the NHL for getting their ish together and the players as well. I'm going to try not to swear as much on this podcast. I know no, I already did enough during the advantage. I know I can, but it's just good for me. I don't want to have that carry over into like CRTC stuff. You don't want to be on radio and you start saying shit.
You want to keep it buttoned because you know, a guy with so many audio mediums as you find yourself on, you gotta remain consistent because you lose yourself in front of a microphone and all of a sudden you're swearing where you shouldn't be swearing.
I'm not Omar. Shout out Omar, by the way. That's a guy who says he would never do any of that radio stuff because, like, you know, he's afraid he'd swear. You should give him like a podcast or something.
Never say never, Omar. Never say never. Now that you're perfectly lit, let's wrap up the show. It's season two of the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. As I mentioned, you're going to be on weekly with me. There's going to be some solo podcasts from me. And Zone Time, the YouTube-only Zone Time previously, is now going to be on the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast feed on any place that you'd find your podcast. So that is very exciting as we trek towards Season 2 and the 2021-22 season on the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Thanks again, Julian, for coming on, for joining me for a full season. We know your slate is never clean, so I appreciate you committing to one more year with us. We're going to have a lot of fun this season, and I'm looking forward to it.
I can't wait to do more episodes with you, whether it's here, whether it's through Zone Time, and interact with everyone else who watches these shows. So I'm with it. Let's do this.
And hopefully Nicki Minaj continues to spout off so we can have things to laugh.
Or Macklemore, who knows? Some artist somewhere.
Don't get into Macklemore. I regret that one already.
We burned him enough. Peace.
All right, see you, man.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.